Happy Wednesday. Welcome to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd and my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Drance, here on the show. Canucks Talk. Oh, wait, you have another job, too. You covered the team for The Athletic. I have to mention that. Canucks Talk brought to you by Abbey Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment.
Well, and that's the thing I think you actually have to mention, not the insider tag, as far as I know.
I was told one thing a long time ago at the start of the show, and until I'm told differently, I'm going to keep doing it.
Pretty sure it's just The Athletic thing
required. We'll see. Anyways, Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Big Wednesday show, as always. Our guys from Donnie and Dolly, Don Taylor, Rick Dollywall, will join us for the crossover here in a few minutes. Jason Bukala at 1. Lots to get into as well. Canucks back on the ice of practice, and
we're doing a live reading of Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Kiyosaki.
Oh, boy. Well, can we skip the Zach Hyman discourse?
What do you mean?
Oh, okay.
I was just talking about rich parents.
Right, right. For no reason whatsoever.
For none whatsoever. I think people would benefit from the live reading.
You should buy all the gold. Invest all your money in gold.
Gold bug Dom's financial.
No, Robert Kiyosaki. That's his thing, is buy gold. Come on, guys. Have you not read the book?
No, of course not.
Are you kidding me?
Who hasn't read Rich Dad, Poor Dad?
Why would I read that?
Who do you think I am, a 50-goal scorer?
The fact that you have read it and taken investment advice from it, Dom, shows me that I should not read it. That's like the ultimate sign that
The end of the book is be a gold bug? That's really where we land.
I can't believe you haven't read Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
You sound like my friend's mom.
All right. Anyway, so we got a lot going on.
apparently not.
That's why we're starting the show like this. But I do want to, like, we're Canucks Talk, obviously, and there's lots of Canucks stuff to get into. We'll get into it on the crossover here in a few minutes. But what a night. What a night of hockey around the NHL last night. Like, just, like, wildly entertaining close games, overtime games with playoff stakes, seeding stakes. That was fun. That was a really good night.
We've talked a lot about how the season is long enough for every take to be both wrong and right over the course of the year.
Mm-hmm.
That Predators Golden Knights game, and considering we did a full segment discussing those two teams the day before, that game was long enough for all of our takes about both teams 100%. To be both wrong and right.
Yeah.
But realistically, like, I'm serious. Go back and listen to... That's as good a preview of that game as you're going to get, right? We talked about the Golden Knights' volatility. What are they?
Mm-hmm.
Do we believe in them? I declared that I suspected that Nashville, not with a ton of confidence because of the Golden Knights' volatility, but I suspected that Nashville was more dangerous. And the reason, and I laid it out at length, they're never out of a game because of the way they generate shots.
Mm-hmm.
Bang, 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 bang. They come back and win 5-4. Blink and you'll miss it. I'm telling you, man, that the way that Predators team can manufacture offense, obviously no guarantee that they will when the chips are down, but they've got that ceiling in them. That is a very scary prospective opponent lurking in a wild card spot. Although, only 2 points back
only
in the Jets now.
Only 2 points back to the Jets, right, which is really fascinating. And then, of course, there's the other side of it, which is where do the Canucks finish in that first or second spot? And, you know, we'll get to the playoff odds on the whiteboard a little later on in the show. Edmonton's still alive in the division, certainly, with a win last night over Winnipeg.
Is that 8 points back?
Eight points back with two games in hand.
And a head-to-head?
And a game again. So certainly very much alive.
I think the Canucks are going to be fine.
I think they will too, but it's not, the door is not shut just yet.
Is it slightly less than a 1-4 shot?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just, end of the day, the Canucks, their schedule is, they have so much time to, like, chill and rest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, this Stars game, obviously, is going to be a tough one. Both teams relatively rested.
Mm-hmm.
Canucks with a narrow rest advantage. But, like, you've still got the Ducks. You've still got the Coyotes twice.
Yeah.
You've still got the Flames.
Who are in free fall.
You know, and then I guess, look, you play the Golden Knights twice, and who knows? That those games might mean something to the Golden Knights, too, right? Like... So, I think the Oilers are out of time now. I really did believe at for long stretches that this would get close, and I guess it still could, but it does feel like the clock is running out. And to the Canucks' credit, they've run out the clock on the Oilers.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, with the way the schedule sets up and all of that, it'd still be a major surprise, but, you know, you can't rule it out just yet.
Oilers have, like, 5-7 to end the year, too.
Yes, they do.
I mean, good luck. Yeah. Like, that. It's just, I just think that that rest edge that Vancouver's going to have is too big to overcome for Edmonton, I suspect. Even the remaining head-to-head, the Oilers are playing the second leg of a back-to-back that night.
Mm.
So, anyway.
People are texting in a lot of takes about rich dad, poor dad right now. Maybe we can get into that later in the show.
No, absolutely.
Bit of roster news quickly, for the Canucks. They announced today they placed Thatcher Demko on LTIR, retroactively recalled Arshdeep Bains. As is so often the case when this happens, when there's the retroactive IR or LTIR designation, it's not actually about the player in question. It's about something else. It's about creating cap space or creating roster space.
Well, and remember, there is no 23-man roster limit. So the Canucks are going over 23 active bodies on the roster and using one of their recalls to bring Arshdeep Bains up from the minors, right? Because they can't do it under emergency conditions. They still have 12 healthy forwards. In fact, 14 healthy forwards with Bains up and Dakota Joshua practicing today in a non-contact jersey, which is important to note.
Mm-hmm.
But they need the cap space. They only have like 85K in available space. Can't fit any player into your lineup under 85K, no matter how much their father earns. And so they're now cap compliant because Demko's gone on LTI. He'll be eligible to return to the lineup on April 6th, which is in and around the like week and a half left in the season timeline that we've always suspected. No reason to panic, although the club took great pains to assure fans of that with, like, for roster management reasons, Demko has been placed on LTI. This is bookkeeping. This is bookkeeping. It's not any kind of substantive update about Demko whatsoever. Well, and, in fact, in no way alters our expected timeline.
It doesn't say anything about Demko. It might say something about Elias Lindholm.
It might say something about Elias Lindholm.
That's the more interesting player, even though he's not involved in the announcement whatsoever. Because, again, we can talk about this more during the course of the show. Not on the ice at practice today, Elias Lindholm.
Yeah, and obviously things have been cryptic and mysterious around him. We know he's battling something. He missed the game against the Los Angeles Kings. He's been missing some practices. Elliot Friedman has been reporting about some appointments. Club hasn't even officially confirmed upper or lower body, but these are complicated developing stories when it comes to players' health. We'll ask Rick Dhaliwal more about it when we do the crossover, like right now.
Yeah. Dom, we good to go?
Play the Brady Bunch music.
Here we go. It is time for the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dolly on Check TV, which you can check out Monday to Friday, 10 to noon. The crossover brought to you by Besant Motors, powering the playoff drive, home of over 400 pre-owned vehicles, and where the players go. It only took us, 7 months, but we got a sponsor for the crossover, guys. It's very, very exciting.
Oh!
Yeah. Oh. Look at us!
Woo! I think the problem, gentlemen, is that I'm box office poison.
Yeah, nobody wanted to do business with Grant.
But thanks to our friends at Besant.
We know that.
I was going to say, Rick, how are you managing having... You have to talk to Drantz twice in a day here. That's tough for you.
It's like when we're working on those articles.
Emotionally for us. Yeah.
All right, lots
a double dose of Drantz.
Whew. It's tough.
Feel
it's
sorry
tough
for you, bud. That's why you're all bundled up.
Yeah, it's cold in here because freaking Taylor won't let us put the heat up.
Okay. That's so not true.
It is true.
It's because the ice cold takes.
Donnie complains about the temperature.
Short sleeves? Yeah, he looks fine.
But it's no, it's cold in here, but he won't let us turn the heat up. So Ryan and I.
That's not, you make me sound like some sort of dictator. No, not at all.
I go to turn the heat up and you say stop. Nah.
We've got the hot television lights on. We need it to be cool here.
Yeah. I appreciate that one of you looks like you're about to have a gin and tonic on the 19th hole, and the other one looks like they're about to take part in the siege of Stalingrad.
Hot toddy.
The siege of Stalingrad.
Yeah. Wow. Was not expecting that reference so early on in the crossover.
Olive drab.
No kidding.
that was very exciting. All right. Let's get into it. Lots happening with the Canucks. We'll start with the status of Elias Lindholm. I know just seeing our guy Batch tweet from practice, no Lindholm on the ice. The last we kind of heard was going to see, have an appointment with a doctor, maybe Sunday, maybe early this week. Now we'll see what Rick Tocchet has to say after practice. Rick, what are you hearing about the status of Elias Lindholm right now?
Yeah, we're all trying to figure out what's going on here. It sounds like they're still trying to figure it out, trying to nail down what it is. Someone said upper body, but I haven't got that confirmed. Donnie mentioned, wondered if it was a hand or a wrist, and I kind of said, you know what, is a hand or a wrist upper body or lower body? We were trying to figure that out on the show. But anyways,
you should have tuned in, guys. It was a great conversation.
I believe it's upper. You have to think about it.
Did you land on
unless you're
there?
Standing?
Unless you have really long
arms.
As
you can imagine, we had a tough time. Yeah, we had a tough time figuring it out. But anyways, it's really kind of like a mystery thing. Like they're trying to figure it out. Like I said, I haven't got that confirmed, but somebody thought it was upper body, and Donnie wondered if it was a hand or a wrist, and I was kind of like, you know, hey, you know what? If it is a hand or a wrist, wouldn't that explain the face-offs? Like, I mean, you can't take face-offs if you got a, you know, a hand or a wrist issue.
Well, it would explain that it wouldn't be a hand or a wrist.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Because he's been taking
so
face-offs.
So we're still...
Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know what? We're still trying to figure it out, but it's kind of like a mystery behind it. It's not really simple. Other injuries, we kind of figured out quickly, but this one's kind of been cloak and dagger.
And then we have a lot of people in the our inbox saying, you know, well, did they acquire damaged goods from the Calgary Flames? Because none of us, I don't know how you guys feel or what you notice. I didn't pick up any one incident where, okay, he was definitely injured on that play. But I know, Rick, you're saying that that's not the case.
No, and the other one is I think people are going to start asking this question, guys. Did the Canucks get damaged goods when they acquired them?
I just said that.
Yeah. And that's what I'm trying to tell. No, but what I'm trying
see,
to...
See, you see what I deal with this guy?
I was texting with some. I'm sorry. I was texting. I got a text, a very important text. I had to look
at it. Why don't you share it with the class?
I can't. I'll get in trouble if I share who just texted with me. But anyways, Donnie.
Was he your doctor?
No, I went to the doctor last week. Listen, I'm telling you, Lindholm, you know, people are going to start asking, Donnie, that's a great point by you. Did they get damaged? But I don't think.
What point? You weren't listening to me.
Just listen, I don't think that they did. I don't think that they did. I'll leave it at that. I've been told that they didn't.
Donnie and I need to start a support group
for
hosts who their co-host doesn't listen to them when they're talking. We need a support group here.
What's your name? Don. I was getting a text. I had to take it.
He's called Don.
No, Dodd. Dodd. I had a text. I had to take it. That's why I wasn't paying attention.
Guys,
it was a very important text.
Too many D names on
guys,
this segment.
We gotta calm this down. Yes, yeah. Jamie and I need a support group for hosts that don't listen to their partners. Anyway, with regards to Lindholm here, Dolly, do you have a sense of like how uncertain this is in terms of how dramatic it could be? Like, do you think there's a risk of a shutdown looming for the Canucks?
Not hearing that, okay. But definitely, you know, it's just, is this the second practice, guys? He's missed in a row now?
Well, and the game
three,
against the
three
Canucks.
Well, no,
practices.
They had the day off.
And the game, yeah.
So, three practices, but he played one of the games in between.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? I go back to Tanner Pearson and just not so much clarity around Pearson early. I'm getting a lot of that right now with Lindholm. Is they're trying to figure it out. They're getting there's a lot of what's going on here.
Hmm.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me if it's a hand or a wrist, and if it is indeed that. As Donnie had mentioned during the show, and that maybe, you know, that's what's bothering him, right? Maybe that's what's bothering him.
Well, and it's kind of interesting with Lindholm, because before this injury situation bubbled up, you know, so much of the talk was that, hey, it's been an underwhelming fit. Like, you haven't seen the player that the Canucks certainly were hoping to get and that fans were hoping to get. But at the same time, you take him out of the lineup, and even just performing the way he's performed since he's been here, it's still a pretty big dent in their depth, right? Like, you still want to have that player. Ideally, he steps up and starts performing better, but it's interesting because there wasn't that much excitement about having him in the lineup, but now that he's gone, I think you see in the depth chart where the Canucks miss him.
Yeah, and he misses the game and they lose to the Los Angeles Kings, but I mean, they've been a thorn in their side, well, except for the one game, but for two of the three games they've played against them. But then again, we had Rick Ball on our show earlier this week. I know you guys were watching. And he said that, you know, one thing you got to realize that Lindholm was having an underwhelming season before he got to Vancouver. Now, I don't know if this health situation was lingering there as well, but that was a good point by Rick. You look at his numbers and, you know, he's not playing with Tkachuk or Gaudreau anymore, and they haven't been that great. And same thing here in Vancouver. Is there a possibility the Canucks made a mistake with that move? Could be.
Time will tell. Hey, Jamie, I do disagree with you on one fact. The Canucks are very strong up the middle of the ice. I don't think this hurts their depth because Suter was playing wing. He was brought here to be a centerman. And now I look at them up the middle of the ice, and I think they're still strong. I think Pettersson, Miller, Blueger, and Suter, and you also have Amon who can play center. I think this team's one of their greatest strengths is up the middle of the ice. I think they're going to be fine
The depth was supposed to be better with Lindholm.
I see what you're saying, right? Rick, but at the same time against LA, you move Suter down to play center, and then Phil DiGiuseppe comes into your top six, right? And then all of a sudden that opens up a hole in your top six, right? So I think it just gives you more options when you have Lindholm in the lineup.
Especially because Suter's been such a good fit with Miller and Besser. Right? I mean, that's the sort of fit you'd prefer not to interrupt. That line's outscored their opponents 14-3. Like, that's the top line. I don't know what else to say. Joshua looks like he's getting a trial there at practice today. With Joshua on the verge of returning, Rick, what do you think of him moving into the top six, potentially getting a look there?
I love it. We were talking yesterday, Donnie and I, about where do you put him. I really wanted the old third line reunited. I really did. I thought it was the best third line in the NHL. But you know what? You got a situation where Garland's now in the top six. You put him right there with Besser and Miller, and that's a big line right there that can cause a lot of trouble on the forecheck. Mm-hmm. And I really like him putting him right. He's been out 6 weeks. Tomorrow's going to be 6 weeks, guys. Obviously the pinky finger is fine, but I like the fact he's going straight to the top six. But there was a piece of me that really wanted to see that third line reunited, but it's totally different than what it was.
It can change two shifts in.
Absolutely.
And I don't know how you guys feel, but and maybe the third period against LA, I don't know what you can read into that, but I like what Garland and Hoglander are due for Pettersson. Mm-hmm. There just seems to be more of a spark there. I think you want to give that trio a little more breathing room, a little more space to create something that could be special. And it's really tempting to put that, if you want to call it, old third line together. But I think there's something there with that trio, and maybe that's what Rick Tocchet is thinking.
Absolutely.
Well, and I just think if you have something working in the top six, you figure it out down the lineup around that, right? But don't break up a line in the top six that's working. Now, you know, in that LA loss, obviously we all saw what LA did to them in the first about 15 minutes of the third period. What was it? One shot for the Canucks in that stretch before they pull the goalie and rally a little bit. And not that they, you know, obviously they've scored a lot of goals throughout the course of the year, but I think we've also seen against teams like LA, sometimes it can be tough for them to generate really good scoring chances consistently. How concerned are you guys going into the playoffs about the Canucks' offensive punch?
Well, I guess the team that plays that 1-3-1, they've got to figure that out. I think the Canucks have been better, and Thomas, you can talk to this, but better defensively than offensively lately versus early in the season when, you know, the offense wasn't a problem at all. But they do have, I mean, the number one thing you have to do against a team against the like the LA Kings is not let them get a lead. Mm. And that was the case on the other night. It was strange because they came back, they made it 1-1 on a great play by Sam Lafferty, but those two goals later in the second period just absolutely killed them. But you got to get that first goal. You got to get the lead against a team like that. I think there's enough talent on this team. We know that. There's enough. Look at this NHL scoring race. There's enough talent on the team where scoring shouldn't be a problem. But they clearly still have to figure out what to do against a team that shuts it down like that.
I love their shots against lately, guys. 17 against. They're winning 2-1 games. They're winning playoff type games. We got 10 games left in the regular season, and they're playing these playoff type games right now, and they're winning some. But they're being involved in these. I love the fact the one goal games. They're playing these tough teams in the West,
And they're keeping the shots on goal down, especially with Demko out. That's so important. But, I mean, defensively, really like a lot of the things they're doing right now. A lot of them.
The problem is the playoff games are 5-4 games. You know what I mean? Like, just look at the Stanley Cup final last year. 9-3, 3-2, 3-2, 7-2, 5-2. Like, do you think this team generates enough? You know, are they too reliant on some of those deflections, on some of that conversion efficiency? It feels like what the Predators did last night to the Vegas Golden Knights, where you just steal a result. You know, that this team's led so much, we haven't seen them very often in those spots, but it doesn't feel like we've seen them do that against a team that wasn't like Columbus.
Yeah, that is interesting. I mean, these last two games, you know, they were beating, what, Calgary and Montreal before this. Then you look at L.A., looks to be a playoff-bound team, and they struggled as they have with L.A. Then tomorrow's going to be a real indication of where this team is at. They're playing a Dallas team that's jumped ahead of them in the Western Conference and the overall standings. It's going to be really, really interesting. But yeah, I never thought we'd be saying we have this conversation. Like if you told me we'd be talking about can the Canucks generate offense against really good playoff bound teams, I would have thought you're crazy. But it seems to be the case right now. But you know, big game tomorrow.
That Dallas team, 5 straight, 8-2 in their past 10. They're also, I think, the only team in the NHL with 7 20-goal scorers. So these guys right across the board have you talked about scoring, Thomas, and the Canucks scoring has dipped in the second half. These guys, 7 20-goal scorers, and they got the kid from Kamloops, Stan Coven, coming in tomorrow. He's been hot. You know, and Donnie likes to remind me the Canucks took Klimovich 6 spots ahead of Stan Coven.
No, you're the one who brings it up
stop,
all the time.
Stop, Donnie, stop. You bring it up. You brought it up this week. But Stan Coven, the kid from Kamloops, he's got a lot of...
That's the only time you were paying attention to me this week.
Okay, Stan Coven, the kid from Kamloops, he's got a lot of fans at the game tomorrow. I'm really, really looking forward to seeing this kid tomorrow.
150 tickets, is it?
150. Yep. I think he bought 25. And I think he paid out of his own pocket, Thomas. Can you believe that? Young kid. He paid 25 of those tickets out of his own pocket.
On an entry-level deal, huh? I hope he hits some of those bonuses next season then, Rick. Especially with Rogers Arena prices. Hey, regarding Dallas, you guys had Chris Tanev on your show earlier today. What's he done, in your view, to elevate that team? What did he have to say about the experience he's had there so far?
The first thing that came out of his mouth, guys, was the crowd at Dallas's arena.
Yeah.
Like he loves the environment. I haven't been to a game there. Thomas, you probably have.
Many times.
I haven't been to a game there. I love what I see on television. Yeah, and I love the camera angles there. We've talked about that on our show. It looks great. But that was the first thing he mentioned versus Calgary, which can be a really quiet crowd. So can Vancouver at times. But that was the very first thing he mentioned. And you talk about a very good team with a crowd like that, and he thinks that combination can really help that team. And look, they've been fairly successful the last couple of seasons. But it was interesting. That was the first thing, Rick, that came out of his mouth, is how much he enjoys playing in Dallas as a member of the home team. He didn't hesitate to say that. And obviously, he's impressed with the quality of the lineup, too.
Well, they're the top team in the West when you wake up this morning. They're 1 point out of the Canucks. Thing about Tanev is the Dallas Stars are going to take a run at re-signing him. They're going to take a good look, but they're going to have to overpay if they're going to keep him, because I'll tell you, if that guy hits July 1st, Tanev, he's going to have a ton of teams after him. He's going to do quite fine. The Vancouver Canucks will be one of the teams poking around on him. But then again, if they re-sign Tyler Myers, do you have enough money for Tanev? So, I mean, there's a lot of things that could happen before now and July 1st.
Yeah, he also said we asked him the question, how tough is it to focus on hockey when you got a big decision coming up in the summer? And he admitted that, it enters his mind every once in a while. But he's a focused guy. It's not going to be a problem. But he has talked about that, and he has thought about Vancouver. So it's going to be it's interesting right now, and the summer will be interesting too.
Oh, big time.
I just want to note, gentlemen, Vancouver Canucks still ahead of the Dallas Stars by point percentage. Just want to note, Canucks still in first in the West.
You know what? You are just that guy at a party that, you know what? The guy at the party, there's 10 guys, everyone's having fun, and there's always that one guy at the party that, you know what, just takes the party in a different direction. That's Thomas.
But he's stitched by his guns, which I admire, just like when it comes to Pedersen and Miller.
I keep getting invited,
he is
man.
The party pooper. That's what Drance is.
I mean, look, I'll
you
say,
are, Thomas, you really are the party
sorry,
pooper.
You're saying the Canucks are not first in the West.
I was going to say, at least in this case,
wow.
He's putting the Canucks ahead of them.
Wow, Rick, you're so negative.
Okay, but I look at the standings, and I see Dallas in first place.
Not by point percentage.
That's it. So you don't need to bring up the percentage stuff. You know,
Rick's a big Dallas Stars booster here. Just
if the Canucks and the Stars both claimed a player on waivers today, he'd go to Dallas. Yeah.
Donnie just
sticking by his guns. I admire it.
Donnie, just don't bring up the Stankoven Klimovich thing next time you guys have Dan Milstein on.
Ooh, don't
stay,
worry.
Stay
no.
away. Stay away from it there.
Hey, Dodd, just quickly, don't write. I know what Stankoven is doing is great. And he went to the American League, ripped it up in Texas. Don't rule out and, don't sit there and crap on Klimovich. I think they made a mistake putting him in the American League after his draft. And you know, that poor kid's been down there 3 years. But don't rule him out. Don't write him off yet.
Well, Stankoven was in the American Hockey League, too.
Yeah, well, not very long, Donnie. He was only there for a half a season. He got called up. But all I'm saying is don't write off Klimovich yet. He's still young.
He is. That's true. So is like Logan Stankoven, and he's in the NHL for the Stars, playing really well.
He's a star player.
Oh,
man.
But God. I get it.
No, look. Yeah. Look, I'm not saying Danilo Klimovich is done. He's young. You're right. But what do you want me to say? Like, who would you rather have right now? It's pretty easy.
Hey, Jamie, yeah. He's a couple years away from being a couple years away. That's what Rick's saying. And Rick, by the way, is right. Rick, by the way, is right. Like, the skill set and combination, if he can stay healthy.
100%.
Size.
No one's going to be shocked if that kid size. Puts it together. But
yeah,
been a while.
It's been a tough path.
Been waiting
There's
a
no
bit.
Doubt about it.
Yeah.
Before we go, I did. You know, you mentioned the right side of the defense going into the summer, Rick. Tyler Myers, if they re-sign him, can they go after Tanev? And then on top of all that, it's Filip Hronek as well, though, right? And we'd heard a couple of weeks ago that they'd maybe started contract negotiations with Hronek. We saw in the last game, you know, he was on a pair away from Quinn Hughes. Today at practice, they're back together. What's your sense of where this is going, Rick?
Well, it's going to be a tough negotiation if he asks for $8 million. There's the national guy that keeps coming on Vancouver radio and keeps saying it's going to start with an eight, right? I don't think the Canucks can do eight. I mean, would you do eight? And we talk about it quite a bit on our show. I mean, how can you go from $4.4 million and your career high in points is 39 and you want over $8 million? Guys, I don't care if you're buying UFA years or not. The one thing that bothers me is there is no defenseman in this city should make a penny more than Quinn Hughes. I mean, I don't get it. Like, if Quinn goes on a run here and gets 90 points, how can, you know, he might hit 90 points, guys. There's 10 games left. He's got 9 points to go. How can you ask for more than that? A defenseman that's just got 90 points? It just makes no sense to me.
But how can you ask a guy who has an arbitration case, which alone would put him into that same stratosphere for next season? And
you don't know that, though, Thomas.
I mean, I know what 50-point right-handed defensemen that lead a team in ice time tend to make at arbitration. Like, he's got one of the best arbitration cases we'll have seen in a decade, Rick. Like, at the very least, it's close. So why are you asking him to sign long-term at a level when next season he's got the right to go to arbitration, earn a commensurate amount, and then potentially go to market with a $95 to $100 million cap upper limit? Like, you can't ask a guy to leave that much on the table just because of a contract that another management group signed 3 years ago when Quinn Hughes was coming off of his ELC and wasn't even a restricted free agent. He was a 10.2C guy, not even eligible to sign a restricted an offer sheet. I'd lose my mind if someone told me that I had to get in line behind Quinn Hughes given
Thomas,
the difference in situation.
He's gone from a career high 39 points. He's at 45. He's got six more than his career high.
The season's not finished.
Yeah, okay. Donnie, let's see he gets to 50. So, Thomas, you think 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 more points than your career high, and you're going to get a $4 million? They can't give everyone $4 million jumps, Thomas.
Look, I understand.
They
but this
pay
is,
raises.
This was always baked into the bet with the Hronek. If it worked, he was going to be pricey. After one season, that was always the case. If you're telling me that the Canucks should have enough confidence in their pro scouting to replace Filip Hronek, I agree with you. If you're telling me, though, that Filip Hronek should not make more than Quinn Hughes, I don't think that makes sense with the reality of his leverage and where the NHL market's likely to move in the next 18 months. You see what I'm saying? Like, I can believe both things. I kind of come down the middle here.
Yeah, there's a good argument for both sides.
Yeah, there is.
An argument on the Canucks side would be that I think the belief was that Hronek would anchor his own pairing, and that hasn't been the case this season. It's been Hronek with Hughes, like Rick says, and he's benefited from that. So that's a check mark in the Canucks column. But I do see where you're coming from when you think about Hughes maybe giving the team a bit of a discount way back when.
I didn't realize I was throwing a grenade in here when I just brought up the Filip Hronek situation. We're over. We'll let you go get your parking sorted out, Rick. Thanks for doing this,
yes,
as always,
right,
guys. And we will chat again next week.
You bet. Thanks, guys.
That is Don Taylor, Rick Dhaliwal, brought to you by Besant Motors. The crossover is brought to you by Besant Motors, powering the playoff drive, home of over 400 pre-owned vehicles and where the players go.
And if you have a party that needs to be pooped... call me. I'm always available.
Rick was upset that you were besmirching the Dallas Stars.
I'm always available to poop on parties.
Poopa.
I'm the party
the grand poopa. All right. That was fun. That went off the rails. We got kind of back on there. We did a whole bunch. Dom is furious that we haven't taken a break yet.
You okay, bud?
What do you think? You want me to go to break, Dom? You think I should go to break?
Should poop on the break.
All right, we'll go to break. More Canucks talk on the other side here on Sportsnet 650.
Hitting the most important topics for Vancouver sports fans. The People Show with Vic Nizar. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What is it? It sounds like 70s TV theme music.
You know what? Honestly, it sounds like kind of like the music that you'd hear in like Final Fantasy 3 when you're like at the fair. You know what I mean? You're like trying to like win something.
I gotta be honest. Never played a Final Fantasy game.
Nerd.
You know what I thought? When I found this on APM, our unlicensed music provider.
Yes.
Ocean's 11.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I can see that.
I guess.
I can see that.
It's a little bit more like the Chrono Trigger fair, but sure. It's more like...
You are such a big it's more like, JRPG guy.
It's more like JRPG side quest music, but that's okay. Ocean's 11.
Got any Earthbound takes for us?
Ness was kind of a loser. No, Earthbound was great, too.
All right. Welcome back. It is Canucks Talk. Sportsnet 650. What a day we're having already here on the show. We're live from the Kintech studio.
Is today the day you finally give me credit for all my sick references?
Absolutely not. I absolutely do not have to hand it to you for your sick references.
You dropped a Lord of the Rings and a Star Wars in one like sentence, and he didn't even flinch.
And it was coherent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. These references were coherent, unlike our show so far.
If you need a pooper to poop on your parties.
Yeah, he was all so in the break, Dom got mad at me. He said that
I didn't get mad. That's over-exaggeration.
You got mad. You came in and chewed me out, told me to focus up.
Yelled at you.
And said...
Stop pooping.
And said, the word poop, you need to quit. You can't pause for dramatic effect. To which I responded to Dom, it's a nautical term. And he didn't seem to appreciate that either.
Pirates of the Caribbean guy.
Imagine if Dom was like secretly like John Tortorella off air.
Oh, that
like
would be so good.
Absolutely like tearing us new ones every time we do something wrong.
Oh, yeah.
And putting on this nice, jolly mask on the air.
That would be amazing.
That would be a good
bit. You should see me with the interns. Crack the whip.
I'll leave that there. All right. Let's try to get back into something related to hockey here. And the Vancouver
not like
Canucks.
That. Oh. No, let's. We didn't mean it like that.
He did.
Oh, did you?
No.
Okay, good.
I'm into RPGs. Jamie's into BDSM. It's an acronym.
Don't
show.
Put that out there. Don't put that out there.
Is that where I pause, Dom? Is that where I should pause? Hey, okay. Dakota Joshua top line.
Yes.
Let's talk about that.
Yes. Let's do it.
Does that tell you anything, you think, about what Tocchet feels like his team is lacking offensively?
100%, although I don't think it tells us anything new.
Right.
Because I think we've known that there's this underlying desire to beef up the forward group,
mm-hmm.
right? And I was pretty surprised they didn't go out and do something even around the bottom of the roster to address that at the trade deadline.
Yeah, me too. I thought forward with size would be something they'd at least look at. Well, and I do think they did. I just think having gone in on Lindholm and having sort of tracked and considered and bid on Toffoli and mm-hmm. Tanev, you know, I just think at some point they were like, well, the prices are too high for, mm-hmm. for the sorts of players available.
But I don't think it's a surprise, especially when you consider...
Like, remember even Sam Carrick costs like a second, third.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean? Like, these Yakov, Trenin, like, these guys weren't going for sevenths. You know?
It's true, especially once you factor in the double retention and all that, which
exactly.
the Canucks would have had to do to avoid taking somebody off of there. So I'm not saying like, oh, it was a massive mistake. It was just I was really expecting it because I think we've known what a priority it is for the coaching staff and for the management group. So I don't think it's a surprise. And I also do think a lot of it comes down to with Lindholm out. And yes, as Rick was saying, like, hey, you still have Neil Zaman who could play center, but they obviously want to be really, really strong down the middle. And that means moving Suter to the middle. So you have Miller, Pettersson, Bluger, Suter, and that opens up a spot on the wings. I'm not sure if Lindholm is healthy, and you know, hopefully at some point he is healthy and in the lineup consistently here. I'm not sure if it Joshua keeps that spot or if it goes back to Suter. I think that's an open question. Although I think certainly Dakota Joshua, because of those unique traits that he has that nobody else on the team really does have, is going to get a chance to run with this spot. Whether he's there just because Lindholm's out or not, like he's going to get a chance to lock down that spot here.
So it's an interesting spot for me analytically considering this because I'm convinced that the Canucks have found their top line. And it's Suter, Miller, Besser. Mm. And I struggle to believe that Joshua can help that line drive the way that Suter can. That said, you know, it's not as if there's been individual bottom line for Suter on that in that trio.
Yep.
Right? It's not like he's been lighting it up, even though, and this is, you know, we talked a lot about Suter in the lead up to free agency, like months before. Right, he was like the guy that I thought should be every team's big target.
Mm-hmm.
I missed massively. I thought teams would recognize how good he was. They didn't. Canucks stole him for 2 years times 1.6. But you know, one of the reasons that Suter's bounced around, one of the reasons that he's on a value contract, is that I think he's one of those guys who has more hockey value, like more value in terms of doing small. Louis Erickson.
Just, I was gonna say, just say little things. Just say it.
No, but doing subtle his contributions in terms of transporting the puck, in terms of just like defensive positioning, like you know, maybe he doesn't win the battle, but he's in position to tie it up so that someone else can come support. Well, like he does a lot of subtle things, subtle stuff that contributes to the act of outscoring your opponents helpfully, and on that line. It's gone nuke. Like, that line's been nuclear with him on the left wing. And so...
I want to make a comparison. I'm not saying that he is this player, right? Because I understand that. But in terms of his actual value outstripping his statistical value, the guy I always think of is Justin Williams. I'm not saying Pugh Suter is as good as Justin Williams, but it's just that Justin Williams, he had a couple years there where he was close to a point per game. But through the bulk of his career, that was not what he was. But he just helped every team he was on win a ton of games. I'm not saying Pugh Suter is in that caliber. I'm just saying
no. That's
like the model I think of as the stats don't tell the whole story. There's more going on than just the counting stats, the offensive production.
I hear you. I hear you. But that's a higher level player than
100%.
What I
intend. No. I'm not saying he's in that tier or that caliber. Yeah. Justin Williams was a stud.
Yeah.
Right? But I'm just saying, like, that's the concept. That's the guy I always come back to thinking about that concept, where the value is not captured close to what it is in terms of goals and assists.
Yeah. No, you're right. So, I mean, I like the comp, but it's like the Justin Williams comp, the contemporary answer to Justin Williams I've always thought was Riley Smith.
Okay.
Because I think you need to be bigger. Williams, not that Williams was like a huge player, but Williams had like real net front and physical value in addition to all the subtle playmaking, battle winning stuff that he did. Like, to me, Suter's more utility level than that. I'm almost trying to come up with like Ben Zobrist.
Okay, we're going outside the sport. I love it.
But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like
100%,
it's like he's not a like Williams for me was like an underrated star.
Yeah, it was like a hidden star.
Yeah, I'm not saying that.
No. And I'm to be clear, I'm not saying that either.
No, I know you're not. I know you're not. I'm trying to come up with the right comp because I just think Justin Williams is a good starting point, but we need to like crank the dial
100%
significantly. To come up with anyway. Like I'm going to stop trying to come up with like a Jesper Fast comparison. Anyway, the thing ultimately is, my bias at this point is that I think Suter should be on that top line. I think they found a really strong answer to their top six problem that it's been a problem in that the team hasn't controlled play at the top of their lineup the way we'd expect them to for so much of the season, the way the elite teams typically do, and yet it hasn't resulted in them not winning games. It hasn't resulted in JT Miller and Elias Pettersson, not challenging for 100 or 90 points this season, right? Like, things have worked fundamentally, but it's still an issue in that if you're going to get to where this team wants to go in late May, I do think you need more punch in your top six, and it felt to me like they found it, And immediately went away from it. Like, immediately on coming up with these two top six forward lines that, in combination over the course of about 220 combined minutes, outscored the opposition by a crooked number, 19-4, it was abandoned. And so part of me doesn't like that. And yet, we've seen a lot of cool Dakota Joshua finishing moments in tight. I think that Dakota Joshua's speed can play. I think the simplicity of his game and the ability to, provide that physical battle along the wall especially is like a really good combination with almost like what the Pearson-Miller-Besser line did in the Bruce There It Is run, right? Which was wildly impressive.
It was really good.
Really good. There's been a historic fit on that line for a big-bodied guy who can play predictable hockey and finish in tight, and I think Joshua can do both of those things, and I think Joshua might have offensive upside beyond what we've really seen, although we've kind of seen it this year. Like, I think there's more there even than he's managed in this career year for himself. So, on the one hand, my curiosity is piqued. Like, you have my attention, or you have my curiosity, not my attention yet. But I guess that's it. The Dakota Joshua thing has my curiosity, but the Suter thing has my attention.
I also wonder how much of this comes down to, and a lot of like, how much of the tinkering in general that we see between now and when the playoffs start comes down to, well, we know we've got Suter with Miller and Besser in our back pocket if we want to go to that. We know that's something that can work. Let's see if Dakota Joshua can work as well, right? Like, let's try out some other things in just the same way that if it makes sense at some point, you could go back to Blueger, Garland, and Joshua, right? Like, that's something that can that can work for you and drive results for you if you think you're, too top heavy all of a sudden moving Joshua and Garland up into the top six. So I think the fact that we're seeing Joshua up there, I think it's worth a shot. That's what it comes down to for me, is it doesn't preclude you from going back to Pugh Suter. It doesn't rule that out. It's just, look, if we want to go really strong down the middle and play Pugh Suter at center, can we still have success with Dakota Joshua in the top six? And I don't have a problem gathering information on that, using these last 11 games here, 10 games, to kind of just get as much data as you can going into the playoffs, because you can always go back to Pugh Suter with Miller and Besser when the going gets tough, right? Like, even game one of the playoffs, you can go back to that if it doesn't work out for Dakota Joshua there.
For sure. And, put it this way. If you want to give Dakota Joshua more offensive opportunity, like, one thing the Canucks rolled out today was two power play units, right? 2D on PP2, no Dakota Joshua, right? Pugh Suter remains on PP1, no Dakota Joshua. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, that's where I'm more interested in seeing...
getting him those offensive chances.
Yeah, like, I'd prefer to see Dakota Joshua trialed at the net front on the power play while leaving Suter intact on that line at 5-on-5, just because, you know, again, we're talking about expected goal shot attempt, actual goal differentials with that Miller, Besser, Suter trio that are, like, best line in the league level across about 175-minute sample. I just have no appetite to see that disrupted. I can't really get over that.
Yeah, that's fair. Again, it's just I don't think it means it's done. You know what I mean?
Well, I hope not. I hope it's not a fear of, like, playing him on at center. Mm-hmm. You know, that, like, while this club thinks can say they have good center depth, because even guys like Joshua can play center, if Lindholm's actually gone and they're not comfortable with him on in the middle,
of playing him on at center, then
you're really limiting your options, especially given that to this point in the season, based on the data we have, Pugh Suter should be a top line winger, not a bottom six center for this team.
It's going to be fascinating to see what happens if and when they get Elias Lindholm back as well. The Canucks were on the ice at practice. I think they're just wrapping up, seeing some pictures of a few guys out there still on the ice at UBC. So hopefully we'll hear from Rick Tocchet, because I'm very curious to hear what he has to say about Elias Lindholm, maybe what he has to say about trying Dakota Joshua with JT Miller and Brock Besser as well. So if we can get that in and get it turned around, we'll play it before the end of the show.
And it does sound like Dakota Joshua told Brendan Batchelor, among other reporters, after practice today, possibly for his status tomorrow.
For Thursday.
He's not sure yet. Thursday. We'll talk about it and see how the morning goes tomorrow morning, of course. So Joshua looking questionable, hopefully on the probable side of questionable, going into tomorrow's game against second best point percentage team in the Western Conference, the Dallas Stars.
We'll see what else we get from practice. But up next, our guy Jason Bukala joins us here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And as always at this time on a Wednesday, we are very pleased to be joined by our pal from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former NHL scout. He is Jason Bukala. Jason, thank you for doing this, man. How are you?
Hey, fellas. Doing great. Did you have a good week off? A little vacay last week?
It was excellent. But it was great to have the week off, but we're, 10 games out from the playoffs now for the Canucks, and there's lots to get excited about looking ahead. So I'm really energized by that as well. It's going to be exciting, I hope, here in the city. Before we talk to some of the things going on with the big team in the Canucks now, Jonathan Lekkerimäki arrived in Abbotsford from Sweden, and it seems to be the plan is that he's going to practice here with the team, maybe play a game, but also keep the door open to playing for Sweden at the World Championships later in the spring. From the team's view, how do they judge, whether it would be good, whether it would be better for Lekkerimäki to go play for his country at the World Championships or keep him in-house at the AHL level? What are the pros and cons of both of those from the team perspective?
Well, the first thing is that the player has played in Sweden for the entire season, and part of the process of those guys when they play in Europe, as everybody knows, the schedule ends obviously earlier over there, and the reason it does is because the World Championships mean a great deal to the Europeans especially. So I think that he would personally, through discussion, just one-on-one with them even, the feedback to him would be, you've had a great year, let's come over here, see where you're at, fitness test, get acclimated a little bit with what we got going on over here. But you know, if you get the call, you know, he would, his response, I can 100% guarantee, would be he'd really appreciate the opportunity to play for his country at this time of year. I don't think that that's a big deal either. I think that that's fine. There's a lot of prospects that their seasons end at this time and they don't even come over for the American League or even to get a cup of coffee at the NHL level. They just kind of stay over there, take a week off, if you will, and then start to train and ramp up with their national team. So not a big deal in the big picture. He's had a really good year, but let's not put the cart before the horse here. There's still work to be done. And for me, that work begins in earnest in the fall all over again.
We'll see if he does get into a game here for Abbotsford at some point, but whether it's this year or next year and he's playing in the AHL, what's the hardest adjustment for a player coming specifically from Sweden or a European men's league and then making the jump to North America and the AHL?
Small area game is a big adjustment. So clearly a defenseman over there, when a forward gets the puck along the wall, he's got that extra space that he's got to go out and defend that player. And you're going to, you know, when you break down SHL games, especially, they like to, they prefer to keep the player to the perimeter as much, but they don't really engage physically. Like they don't jump to the wall to keep him there as much. So he's going to have to learn to adjust to make plays in small areas much, much more quickly. And then he's also going to have to absorb more contact over here to extend a play. I feel good about how he's tracked this year. I feel good about his progress, but make no mistake, it's going to be a learning experience. It's going to take a little bit of time. It's going to start at development camp in the summertime, I would imagine, depending on, you know, what their plan is there, if he does go play at the Worlds. And then, you know, I want him to play to his identity. I want him to be able to adjust, to find open space, get the timing down. And then, of course, let's not forget, there's an expectation to track back to 200 feet and be at least average when you're producing offense as a pro over here. Be at least average. This coach in Vancouver wants you to be beyond that. So you're going to have to worry about how you contain people and do your job, depending on how the D zone coverage is next year in Abbotsford to start. That's a big lift as well.
Books. Elias Pettersson is the defenseman, is also in Abbotsford, yet to make his AHL debut. His situation a little more clear. Doesn't look like he's going to play in the Worlds for Sweden, so he will at some point presumably get into the lineup. How much different is it for a defenseman than the adjustment you just described a forward going through in the area game?
So, you know what? It's different, and the challenge... I'm going to say Pettersson for the way that he plays the game. I actually believe that his adjustment, his learning curve, if you will, is going to be less. And that's kind of backwards to the way I strategize and think things, because really a defenseman over here takes, you know, a couple of years at least to really get comfortable with the surrounding, you know, the smaller ice, et cetera. But I really feel like this is going to benefit him. He's got, you know, big body, really smart, can play the game a variety of ways. I love his bite, fellas. And I think that because a small area is going to fit into that category, he's going to bite people more, and he's actually going to be more assertive over here, which I think is which is a huge part of his upside as a player, that spatial defending where, you know, don't come in my area, because if I lose the battle, you're going to pay a price for that. And I think that's going to fit into his category very well.
At the NHL level, Jason, I mean, we just saw the Canucks lose to the Kings in their most recent game, 3-2. But, you know, one of the big stories from that game was they really had trouble generating offense, especially when they were trailing in the third period. And we've seen that, you know, even in the game they won against LA in all three matchups, it's been a really, really tough slog for the Canucks to get scoring chances against the Kings. Is there something specific that you see in the way the Canucks play or the personnel of the team that makes them kind of susceptible to getting shut down like that against a really good defensive team like LA?
I'm not so sure that it's that they're susceptible to it as much as LA seems to be dialed in, perhaps better against the Canucks than anybody else in the league. I mean, you know, the thing with the Canucks, you know, when they're going with their speed and their transition game and then the top of the lineup, you know, with the Millers and the Pettersons and the Bessers, when they're buzzing, you know, and I would even go down to the three hole, you're not getting a lot of offense out of guys like Suter and that in the depth, but, you know, they're playing fast. when they can cause problems. But when teams like LA, who are big, strong, heavy, hard teams, take away the middle of the ice and clam it up, it's a tough ask to engage physically, chip it to space, absorb a bump, get past the bump. And the Canucks have had a little bit of a difficulty with that. Well, not a little bit. And they're not alone. Like, you know, I just think LA does it best against Vancouver for some reason. There's a lot of teams that are having trouble with the LA Kings fellas. They have the best penalty kill in the entire National Hockey League, and they're 12th best on the power play. And those two statistics going into playoffs with the way that they play, they're going to be a tough out.
What are you seeing from down ballot in the Western Conference? How real is what Nashville's doing?
Oh my gosh. Like, after 10 games, I was like, wow, this is a nice run. Now it's like getting a little out of control. I mean, how would you like to be the Vegas Golden Knights last night? I mean, this is a team that's, you know, I think they're going to be a wild card team. You know, they're like 6 points up on St. Louis. But I really do believe that Vegas has been exposed quite a bit on a lot of different levels through the entirety of the year. I mean, they're a 500 outfit, fellas, from basically November on. They're not, you know, they haven't been, you know, running away with things. They're like 3-1-1 in the last five, which is obviously positive, but last night was not. And that had a lot to do with Nashville's tenacity. They're feeling it. You know, it's just like, I don't know, it's lightning in a bottle, but it's gone so far. What is it, 18 games? 16-0-2, I think, now? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's insanity at this time of year. So you wouldn't want to face them in a playoff series right now. But having said that, it's going to be interesting when the bubble does burst, if there's a huge crash back down to earth here.
Well, and it's to your point, we've been kind of having this debate the last couple of days on the show, Jason, but it's wild that we're here, but I think it's a live debate now. Like, would you rather face Nashville or Vegas in the first round of the playoffs, which is incredible considering, you know, how we viewed these two teams, even as recently as a couple of months ago.
Yeah, fair. I agree with that. My vote is Vegas, I have to be honest with you. I think that, you know, on balance, again, like when you're playing out the body of work for the entire, like Nashville feels real good about themselves right now. Let's say they become a 500 team down the stretch. They got 10 games left, they go 5-5. They still have that in the bank where they felt really good for such a long period of time, and they recognize that they can come back from, you know, two goals down, three goals down, whatever the case may be. You know, Saros can steal a game. Vegas, you know, this is a team that over their last, like, 20 games, they're like a -9 on the goals for, goals against differential. Their save percentage as a team is like .882. You know, there's a lot more leaking going on in Vegas, and I feel like I'm not intimidated by the Vegas Golden Knights if I'm the Vancouver Canucks in Vegas's present form. And it's curious because they added guys at the trade deadline, obviously, and some of those guys just haven't done the job, to be frank. Like, Mantha has been pedestrian. You know, Hanifin's just looked okay. And then we're going to see what happens, you know, with guys coming off IR, and that's going to be another conversation for another day. But, you know, right now, I'd prefer to play Vegas.
I'm in on the Preds, Spooks, because they just generate quality looks 5-on-5. They haven't always been going in for them, right? But they've got that top line work, and the, like, you're never going to be safe in a game. They can just generate raw power in terms of generating scoring chances. How, like, for me, I actually see some shades of the 2023 Panthers here. Now,
I'm glad you're bringing this up. Yeah.
Especially because, you know, start slow under Bruno, but by the end of the season, get a little bit hot, start to, like, really understand the system, lots of new ads, and that ability to eliminate problems because you can outscore them. I mean, for me, in the contemporary playoffs, like, there's a reason it was Vegas and Florida at the end, and it was, those were the two best those were the two teams that most reliably generated 5-on-5 scoring chances.
So can we double down on this conversation for a second? Andrew Brunette has done an outstanding job as a head coach in the National Hockey League. when he took over the Panthers under, you know, trying circumstances at the time, he established, you know, he didn't ever want to be bigger than the group, if you will. People who don't know Bruno, like, this is a guy that isn't bigger than the team. He's not like that guy who wants to get in front of the press and, you know, be bombastic or anything like that. But behind closed doors, what he's telling the guys is, this is how we expect you to play, but you have a freedom to compete and let your skill take over. Like, your compete and your skill, the combination of those two things with the how fast we want to play the game and possess the puck, we're going to allow you the flexibility to not be boxed in as a player. We want you to be in motion. We want you to make plays, but we want you to compete to the best of your ability every time you roll over the boards. And it took some time in Florida, and it's taken some time in Nashville. Do you think the New Jersey Devils would like to have Bruno back right now? Do you think, you know, a bunch of teams would have wished they would have been able to snag this guy up? I'm with you. This reminds me a lot of that Florida team. And here's the other thing, guys. I would suggest to you, the part of the culture that was starting to be created in Florida was because of Andrew Burnett. And it was just a continuation on with Paul Maurice, who's a veteran coach. He took it over and it's gone to another level. But, like, listen, they are tenacious. They're on it. They're confident. And they're a happy group. Like, you know, they had some hiccups through the year, you know, like, you know, Tyson Berry type noise, and all teams go through those things. Right. But the team never seemed to stop trying to get better and continue to move forward. Even when we all thought they were just going to sell off everything at the trade deadline and they were going to not be a playoff team. And wow, it's a great story. And there's a lot of guys who are up for coach of the year. If they run out 10 more wins and this guy gets to 50 wins with that outfit there, like, he's got to be right in the mix.
Yeah, I still think it's Tocchet's award to win here, given how dramatically he's transformed the Canucks' defensive game. But you're totally right about Andrew Burnett. And you just look, there's obviously lots of good players on Nashville, but, you know, still, it's the guys they picked up at the deadline, right? Like Anthony Beauvillier, Jason Zucker, they were not necessarily in high demand. You know, Gustav Nyquist playing on the top line. He's done it with, again, good players, but not necessarily what we think of as star-type talent in the NHL, and yet he has them as one of the most dangerous offensive teams in the game, and it's becoming a bit of a signature for Andrew Burnett already in his NHL career that, you know, your team is going to score if he's behind the bench.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? They're going to give up some shots too, but they're going to, on balance, they're going to outchance their opponents. And when they're really going, they're going to outwork them. And, you know, it's not science. Like, you watch him, he's got a demeanor. He has an expectation. You play this way, we're going to have success. If you don't, we're not. And there's going to be a consequence to that, but it's not outward, guys. Like, I really like his demeanor on the bench. I like the way he handles the group. And this was a really successful pro who bled everything he could out of his game. Like Bruno, when he played in the league, he'd have a hard time playing today and scoring the way he did back in the day because it's a track meet now. And he wasn't, you know, he was an average skater, right? But boy, he had great, great mitts and an offensive brain, and it's continued on into his coaching career. I'm with you on Tocchet, by the way, for the coach of the year thing. I mean, there's no two ways around it. I mean, the way that this team is, like, 192 goals against, you know, right now, I don't know what it was. I haven't looked back on last year or even the year before, but the improvement in Vancouver defensively, like, their team game overall, is that's coaching, right? Obviously, you got to have guys that buy in, but the personnel was mostly in place, and that's good coaching.
Can I drop? I'm going to throw you for a loop here. I'm going to drop a current NHL player, Andrew Brunette player comp for you, and get you to react to live on air. Books, you ready?
Oh, yeah.
Andre Kuzmenko.
Yeah, that's
you see it, right?
Yeah. Except that, you know, Kuzi rips him from the flank, and at least Bruno got around the crease, middle of the ice a little bit more. I thought you were going to throw like even maybe like a Tyler Toffoli type in there. You know, guys that aren't burners, but they figure it out. You know, they find a way. But
I'm serious though, Kuzmenko, man. Like, right down to. Right down to Andrew Burnett had the delayed breakout in Minnesota, right? Where he had 69 points for the Jacques Lemaire Minnesota Wild, which, by the way, that's like 100 points.
That's 130 points somewhere else, by the way.
Yeah, you got to adjust for that. And then kind of like sagged and then eventually found a home again on Joe Sakic's wing, right, as like a complimentary. And I kind of feel like that's where we're going to go with Kuzmenko. It's like he's going to be like a 40-point guy for a bit unless he can find another Pettersson to ride shotgun with.
Listen, I don't disagree with that in the least. I mean, you know, Zach Hyman, and I like Zach Hyman a lot. Like, and you know, I appreciate that he goes to the hard areas and cleans it all up. But honestly, like a guy like Kuzmenko, Brunette, those types of guys, like they could ride shotgun with McDavid and score a lot, like
right.
because they would just get the puck in the proper areas, right? So, no, I see it. That is a great story, though, the Hyman thing. I got to give him a shout out. Like, you know, obviously we drafted him in Florida back in the day. I didn't like that he walked on us to Toronto.
Right.
That's a story for another day. But, of course, there's never any tampering in the NHL. We know that, right? Anyways, you know, for him to get where he's at, like, this is people who don't know Zach Hyman, you know, religiously, I don't mean by religion religiously, but I mean as a person, this is a great story because that's a good human being with a high success there.
I want to ask you about, you know, Zach Hyman, of course, played college hockey for a long time at Michigan. College hockey playoffs about to start up. I have two questions on this front. One Canucks related and then one a little more general. I'm going to start with the more general one. They both pertain to Boston University.
Okay.
Macklin Celebrini, where would he stack up if he were in last year's draft class?
Macklin Celebrini would go top four in this draft class. So I would still... some people will be splitting hairs on the Carlson and the Fantilli and the Celebrini. Obviously, Bedard's Bedard. But still in that area, like Reinbacher went fifth. He's still in the top five.
Yeah.
You know, for me.
But you'd have him behind Fantilli.
I'm splitting hairs on that, to be honest with you. I really am. Like, I don't know that the ceiling isn't more natural on Celebrini, but I'm splitting hairs. You understand what I mean? Like I'm having to create an argument in my mind, so it's not like this natural thing that I'm saying, yeah, that guy over that guy. So,
yeah,
very close.
Fantilli's size and raw skating ability. I think it's fair to go either way. But man, I was stunned when I saw Celebrini live. Just how easily he cuts through checkers at the Div 1 level as a 17-year-old. I mean, there's a little bit of Jack Hughes there, a little bit of you know, I don't know, pick a high-end two-way center. Let's go Taves, but not with a ton of confidence. And then he's also got that shot to play the flank, like, day one in the NHL on the power play.
Yeah, that's where he's got a little McKinnon in him, too, there. Like,
right.
He's a mutt. Like, all those guys you just said right there, but he's like that mutt who's the best frisbee dog on the beach. You know what I mean? Like, he's unbelievable. So, he could step right into the league next year. I fully expect that to happen. Going to be interesting to see what happens with BU here in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously Willander's there. He needs to go back for a year. I'm curious to see what happens with Lane Hutson, the Montreal Canadian draft pick,
right.
when the season ends here. My gut tells me he's coming out. And then, you know, a conversation for another day, guys, is going to be what are the Montreal Canadiens going to do with this glut of talent on the back end? They've got way too many defensemen. And are we going to be looking at, as we plane out to the draft, some possibilities to acquire some of those talented players from Montreal, or are they going to sit on this mountain of defensemen for a couple of years?
And let's talk about Willander. Is there anything he can do in the tournament to alter how you'll regard his performance this season, that first year in North America?
No, his body of work for me is complete right now for this year. This is the time of year that these are high leverage scenarios now. So this isn't the time of year for me to overanalyze him, I don't want to give him too much, but I also don't want to take away too much either, because these are hard games and it's like one and out, fellas. Like, this isn't a best 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 5. It's like one and out, and they're all good teams. And, you know, Drancer, when you go watch a college game, you know how they play. Like, they play literally like their hair's on fire. Like, it's unbelievably, it can get hectic, can't it? Like, it's really fast. It's really tenacious. It's really up-tempo. Sometimes it lacks detail. So these kids right now, they're so amped up for what's going to happen this week, and they're going to lay it out on the line for one game. So if you put that in perspective, I'll even dissect it a little bit more. If you're like a Willander and you get 18 to 20 minutes in that game, you know, it would be unfair to overanalyze those 18 or 20 minutes compared to his body work over the course of the whole year.
Jason, great stuff as always, man. We appreciate it. We'll do it again next week.
All right, boys, take care of yourselves. Looking forward to playoff talk as we get down the stretch here.
Absolutely.
Let's go.
It's going to be good. Thanks, man.
All right, boys. See ya.
That is Jason Buchla from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former NHL scout, joining us as he always does on a Wednesday. I did want to read this text. You could probably neutralize Nashville pretty quickly if you use Where the Streets Have No Name. Just reintroduce U2 to them and they're cooked. Their origin story is not getting to see U2.
U2
is secretly their kryptonite.
Right.
If you expose them to U2, it saps all the powers they gained by skipping the show at the Sphere. I like it. I think it's worth trying. Got to try it.
They
I love how
they blues, needed more Bruno, less Bono.
The Blues had Play Gloria, and this is like, do not play U2. This whole run is dependent on absolutely not us hearing U2 at any point.
So they're like a bunch of under 30s.
What, not playing U2? I mean, I also don't get really care for U2, to be honest.
Really?
So, yeah. I don't like dislike them. They've just never really clicked for me.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That is
you a
wild.
Big U2 guy?
Well, I mean, I'm not like a big U2 guy because I like to think I know better. But I hear the first few chords of like War.
Yeah,
or
like, some
Sunday
good,
Bloody Sunday.
Songs. Like Sunday Bloody Sunday is an awesome song. But I don't think I've
With or Without You.
I don't know if I've ever like been like, I'm gonna listen to some U2 right now. You know what I mean?
I know what did it for you. And this actually all makes sense now. Jamie had an iPhone. Apple put U2 on his iPhone, and ever since then, he doesn't listen to U2 or has an iPhone.
Never had an iPhone.
At the resort I was staying in Mexico, there was an infinity pool on a rooftop where I spent a lot of time, and they had a like house remix of With or Without You, so it would be like, and then you hear the like, and every time it came on, I was straight up like a woo girl. I was like, yeah,
let's go.
Put more rum in that pina colada. It's time to cut loose.
On that note, we'll go to break. We'll have an update.
Did I poop a party?
A little bit. I hope you didn't do that in Mexico.
Man. Oh, man.
I want to ruin that infinity pool.
When you go,
it's a nautical term
with a code brown.
It's like poop deck.
All right, we'll take a break. We got some updates from Rick Tockett on various topics. We'll do the whiteboard to wrap up the show in the final segment. Coming up next here, Sportsnet 650.